Hello and welcome to Hacker Public Radio. This is episode 13 for Thursday, January the 17th. I'm the host of today's show. My name is Ken Fallon. This is the first in a mini-series entitled Linux Professional Institute Certifications, LPIC. And in this mini-series, I'm going to hope to provide you with some information that will help you in passing some of the certifications provided by the LPI Institute. According to Wikipedia, the Linux Professional Institute, Inc., LPI, is a non-profit organization that provides vendor-independent professional certification for Linux system administrators and programmers. Now, the certifications themselves are available in many countries and in many languages, and the community participates in the exam creation. From my point of view, I think the LPIC is well-respected and recognized at least as much as the Red Hat certifications or those provided by Novell. They have three levels of certification, the junior, advanced, and senior level. And for the junior level, you need the junior level to continue on doing the rest, I believe. I'm going to say I believe because I haven't actually done any of the certifications myself. And the reason I'm doing this podcast series is so that it will be a way for the information in the documents to sink in. And we will continue. The task overview is to work at the Linux command line, provide easy maintenance tasks to help users out, to add users on a large system backup and restore, shutdown or reboot. Also, to install and configure a workstation including X and connect it to a LAN or a standalone PC via a modem and an internet. Prerequisites for the junior level are passing exam 101 and 102. I've seen some advice that you're better off preparing for exam 101 and 102 together, as some of the questions switch between exams. The documentation that we're going to be using are the IBM documentation provided on www.ibm.com/developerworks/linux/LPI. And while the LPI on the LPI web pages themselves, they say while they can't recommend any documents, these documents seem to be well respected in the community. Now you need to register with IBM in order to be able to access these PDF files. The copyright does remain with IBM, but I believe we should be allowed to use them under the fair use provision, although I'm not a lawyer. Software that we're going to be using is the VMware server, largely because of the VMware uses a BIOS, while other VMware other virtualization solutions don't. We're going to be using CentOS and Debian NetInstall, the CentOS 5.1 NetInstall.iso, and the Debian 4.0R1 i386 netinstall.iso. You can get them on their respective websites. Install the VMware server and then install the VM for Debian with 256 meg of RAM, 8 gig disks, not pre-assigned, not split. When you get to partitioning, select the entire disk, create a separate home, user, var, and temp partitions. That'll be an option. So it'll be interesting when we're doing analysis of when we're investigating the file disk structure. When you get to software, choose software to install, deselect everything. So basically install a minimum system. More or less the same with CentOS, 256 meg of RAM. For me, the SCSI disk didn't work, so I switched it to an 8 gig ID disk, again, not pre-assigned and not split. You'll be prompted for an FTP location, so go to the mirror list site and select a FTP site near you, and the directory in that mirror, FTP mirror that's located next to you, would be 5.1/ISO/I386. Now, excuse me while I take some tea, and then we'll be right back with going into LPI exam 101 prep, hardware architecture, junior level administration, topic 101 by Ian Shields, senior programmer with IBM. LPI exam objectives, configuring fundamentals BIOS setting. I'm reading. You will learn to configure fundamental system hardware by making the correct settings in the system BIOS. You will learn about configuration issues such as the use of IBA on the IDE hard disks larger than 1024 cylinders, enabling or disabling integrated peripherals, and configuring system with or without external peripherals such as keyboards. We will also discuss correct settings for IRQ, DMA, IO addresses for all BIOS administered ports, and for settings for handling errors. That has a weight objective. All the exams, all the sections in the exams have a weight objective. This has a weight objective of 1. Now moving on to page 5, system and BIOS overview, and again I'm quoting from the documentation. A modern personal computer or PC system consists of a central processing unit, CPU, for performing calculations, along with some memory for storing data that the processor is using. To make such a device useful, we attach peripheral devices such as a keyboard, mice, displays, hard drives, CDs, DVD drives, printers, scanners, network cards, which will allow us to enter, store, print, display, and transmit data. In the computer just described, the memory used by the processor is called random access memory, or RAM. In a typical PC, the memory is volatile, meaning that it requires power to keep its data. Turn off the PC and the memory is wiped clean. Put another way, when we turn off a PC, we turn it into a collection of hardware components that will do nothing until reprogrammed. This reprogramming occurs when we turn on the machine. The process is called bootstrapping or booting the computer. The BIOS stands for Basic Input Output System. And from Wikipedia, the principal duties of the main BIOS during the power on self test are as follows. Verify the integrity of the BIOS code itself. Determine the reason the power on self test is being executed. Find, size, verify system main memory. Discover, initialize, catalog all system buses and devices. Pass control to other specialized BIOSes if and when required. Provide a user interface for system configuration. Identify, organize, and select which devices are available for booting. Construct whatever system environments that is required by the target OS. I find that relatively difficult to understand, so I've gone out and found a document which explains the boot up process of a PC. Now, when you turn off your computer, as the IBM document states, it's forgotten everything. So when you turn on your computer, your processor has no instructions on what to do. It has no idea whether it's a server, a PC, a laptop, or whatever. So there's a breadcrumb trail left for the processor so that it can learn more and more and more stuff. So this, the term bootstrapping occurs, and it's a sort of joke that was introduced in the 50s from, again, according to Wikipedia, from a legend of Baron Munchausen, who was able to pull himself up by his bootstraps when stuck in a marsh. So after we go through this boot sequence, I think you'll understand what sort of chain is involved. Okay, so you turn on the power at the socket, and the power goes to the power supply, power comes out of the power supply and into the motherboard. First thing that the motherboard does is sends a reset to the CPU. This may seem strange, but the CPU, the motherboard is waiting, or the chipset or whatever, is waiting for what's called a power good signal to come in. And then when it receives that power good signal, it knows that the power supply is good and everything's working. It knows what good means is plus 5 volts, which, and again, that can be anything between plus 3 and plus 6 volts. So it gets that, it says, okay, the power supply is okay. I'm now going to clear the reset flag, and I'm going to allow the power into the CPU. Now, once the CPU gets the power, in other words, the reset flag is cleared, it knows only one thing, and that's to go and start reading in memory reading in code from address FFFF0000 right at the end of system memory. Now there's only 16 bytes of code there, but all that usually contains a jump to where it's supposed to go to find the rest of the real BIOS program. The BIOS program will start a power on self-test, and if there are any errors, you'll hear beeps. Just as a side note there, if you are troubleshooting a PC, it's not coming up, it's not booting, you don't know what's wrong. Usually, most motherboards, if you have a series of audible alerts, audible beeps that occur, for example, on an AMI system, 5 beeps might be a problem with your processor. So if you're troubleshooting it, find out what the motherboard type is, download the PDF about the documentation, go to the error code section, and it should be give you some, should be able to hear what's wrong with the motherboard and replace that component, and then move on your merry way. Anyway, the BIOS continues on, and the first thing it will do is try and look for a video card, and this is typically at location C000000 in memory, and then it will call and execute the BIOS on the video card. So this is the first indication that you'll see that something's going on. So and it also explains why the video card is usually the first thing that you see coming up rather than all the other checks from the BIOS. Excuse me. Then the BIOS will go and do the exact same thing for other devices that it finds. For instance, array controllers if you have them, other things. And then it'll display a startup screen, it'll do some more tests, and then it'll start doing a system inventory of sorts. Now, there's actually two types of booting. One is a warm boot and one is a cold boot. So a cold boot is when the computer is physically turned off, no power going anywhere. And when you turn it back on, that's called a cold boot. A warm boot is when you hit the reset switch, and when you hit the reset switch, it sends that reset signal that we were talking about before to the processor, and it also sets a little flag to say that yes, it's been a warm boot. So on this breadcrumb trail, as the CPU and the BIOS comes along to that point, it can go, okay, this is actually a warm boot that's occurring, or it's a cold boot that's occurring. During the system inventory thing, it takes a look at the hard disks that are in there, how many cylinders, platters, that sort of thing. We'll get into that later on. The COM ports and the LPT ports that are available. This is also, after this, it'll go and do the plug and play stuff, which we'll also be talking about later. Then you'll see a summary screen, and then depending on the settings on the BIOS, it'll start looking for a boot device to boot. So typically it might look for a floppy disk, and it might look for a CD-ROM, and it might look for a hard disk, and then if it can't find that, it might try a netboot or something. Typically, for a Linux operating system, it'll look for the master boot record starting at the first bootable disk at cylinder 0, head 0, sector 1, which is the first sector. It'll then start reading in code into the processor from there, and that'll be typically a bootloader. Well, for Linux, it'll be typically a bootloader like Lilo or Grub, which we will also be covering later on. So that's the end of this little side note on the boot process. And that's the end of this episode in the mini-series on LPI certification for Hacker Public Radio. For feedback, corrections, or contributions on the series, please email me at ken.fallon@gmail.com. For general feedback on Hacker Public Radio, you can email feedback@hackerpublicradio.org. Remember, Hacker Public Radio is for the community and by the community. So if you'd like to do a show, a series of shows, or provide some other assistance, please email admin@hackerpublicradio.org. With that, I'd like to thank you for listening and wish you a very good day.
Thank you for listening to Hacker Public Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.